Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome back in. Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Buck under the weather. We are tracking Capitol Hill movement on the Biden agenda. In particular, the infrastructure bill reportedly going to be brought up for a vote today in the House. But we finally got the details announced of exactly what will be in the budget reconciliation bill. And I am reading from this right now. The framework cost $1.85 trillion. Of course, that is not an accurate rendition of what this truly cost because it's not expanding off into the future. They term limit this. And the reality is this is a $5 to $7 trillion cost in the years ahead. But this is what is in the bill. $555 billion to fight climate change through tax incentives for low emission sources of energy. $400 billion. By the way, I'm reading from the New York Times, which has this bill itemized, just FYI. This has just come out in the last hour or so. $400 billion to provide universal pre-kindergarten to 3- and 4-year-olds. And to reduce healthcare costs for working families earning up to $300,000 a year. $200 billion to give parents a tax credit through 2022 to basically pay parents for having their children. $165 billion to reduce healthcare premiums. $150 billion to reduce a waiting list for in-home care, $150 billion to build 1 million affordable housing units, $100 billion for immigration, in part, and we got to get into what exactly these details are because this is just a rough outline, to reduce a backlog of 9 million visas. And remember, House Democrats have already passed a bill that would bury immigration costs into this budget reconciliation bill that would help to lead to more citizenship. Again, the details here are devilish indeed, and we don't have all those. And then $40 billion for worker training and higher education. Okay, that adds up to $1.85 trillion. And they are saying that they have offset the cost of the $1.85 trillion with tax increases. How do they get there? Again, this is a rough outline released today by the Biden administration. 15% minimum tax on large corporations. Efforts to reduce profit shifting. Whatever that means, I guess more aggressive IRS coverage, which has been disputed, 1% tax on corporate stock buybacks, increased enforcement with the IRS, an additional 5% tax on incomes exceeding $10 million a year, and another 3% tax on incomes above $25 million, and efforts to limit business losses for the wealthy, and an additional 3.8% Medicare tax on people earning more than $400,000 a year who didn't previously pay that tax. All right, that is a massive amount of information that has all come down in the last hour. The biggest issue here is, will Nancy Pelosi actually allow a vote on infrastructure? Does she have the votes to get that passed? We will continue to track this throughout the course of the show, but we have got a ton of stories that we are tracking and that we are chasing. We've got major issues with everything that is going on with COVID vaccine mandates. We've got potential police and firemen losing their jobs in New York City. We've got the gubernatorial election in Virginia, which is massive. And we've got to talk about former President Trump, who is going to be on with us tomorrow, and what he is going to be doing in Georgia very soon. But first, I have to tell you all about my friends at Pure Talk. I've got my 13-year-old on Pure Talk, and they do an amazing job. You can use the exact same 5G network, whether you have one of the big carriers out there, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, it doesn't matter. You can get unlimited talk, text, 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. How do you do it? With your phones right now. I want you to put them in your hands, and I want you to take advantage of a 30-day risk-free guarantee. All you have to do, you have nothing to lose. Dial pound 250, say Pure Talk. You get 50% off your first month. That's pound 250, say Pure Talk, pound 250. Do it. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. I am back from Houston. By the way, let me say this. Incredible time all over the city of Houston. I took my 11-year-old to watch World Series Game 1 and 2. We did the show I did yesterday from our Houston affiliate. Just an absolutely fantastic time down in Houston. Astros win Game 2. Appreciate everybody out there listening at KTRH, one of our biggest affiliates among many. We love all of you in all 50 states. Monster audience for this show down in Houston. Met a lot of you. Appreciate everybody who came up and shared feedback on the show and how much you're enjoying it, and welcome me to your city along with my 11-year-old. We had an incredible time watching games 1 and 2 of the World Series. And certainly the state of Texas, under the leadership of Greg Abbott, has been one of the states that has been punching back the most against all these draconian restrictions associated with COVID and all the ridiculous decisions that are being made by the Biden administration. The state that has fought back the most, I think it's fair to say, is Florida. And right now we've got some interesting dynamics going on in Florida, where Governor Ron DeSantis has hired a brand new surgeon general, a graduate of Harvard Medical School, who has actually been sharing a lot of the details and data that we share with you on a day-to-day basis. Now, Buck is out right now. He's sick. He's going to be back tomorrow. We are chasing the infrastructure deal potentially on Capitol Hill, whether the budget reconciliation bill is going to advance in any way. I'll give you an update on that in the next segment. We also have a loaded show. Molly Hemingway is with us at the top of the next hour, and then our friend Alex Berenson will talk the latest associated with COVID. But first, I want you to be able to hear somebody who is actually speaking truth to power and sharing facts, which is an important thing to do, particularly as kids are being, the argument at least is out there that kids should be getting the COVID vaccine, which I think is absolutely crazy. Well, Florida's Surgeon General, Dr. Joseph Latipo, he was on Tucker last night. And by the way, we're going to have Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. We're scheduled to have him on the show next week on Tuesday. And we probably need to, at some point in the near future, get Florida Surgeon General Dr. Joseph Latipo on as well. He was on Tucker last night, and he shared the fact that data just flat out doesn't support masks.
A really good example is this obsession with masking kids in school. And yes, when you look at the evidence for mask mandates in schools, it's very weak. You know, the highest quality evidence we have, in fact, for masks basically shows really no evidence of a health benefit, as in an improvement in a child's health outcome by implementing these mask mandates. And there's not even any solid evidence for cloth masks. So, you know, where benefit has been shown, it's primarily been with surgical masks. But, you know, Americans have unfortunately been just slammed constantly with this message that you must mask these children. But, you know, we haven't asked enough about the high quality data. It doesn't support it. And we don't do it in Florida.
So I think that is fabulously well said. Think about how much different our country would look right now if you had Dr. Latipo there, the Surgeon General of the state of Florida, actually making these arguments in public instead of Dr. Fauci, who is consistently showing up like the boogeyman to try and terrify parents and make them believe that their kids are under a severe danger from COVID when the data doesn't reflect that that's remotely true. So why is this significant? Well, it's significant because DeSantis and other governors, thank God for federalism, are fighting back against the proposed federal vaccine mandate. Now, it's worth noting that Joe Biden announced his federal vaccine mandate on September 9th, I believe it was. He still has not officially released the regulations drawn up by OSHA that would require that federal mandate to be in place. As a result, we're not sure exactly how many religious or health exemptions might be granted and how aggressively this policy is going to be implemented. But what we are sure of is there are going to be a lot of people, many of you out there listening right now, that are forced to make a decision. You may well have had COVID, like I have, about whether or not to follow a mandate issued by your company, especially if your company employs over 100 people, which means that it would be a part of this federal vaccine mandate. Are you going to go get the COVID vaccine, or are you going to make a decision to potentially quit your job, to give up your job? And that's why I think what Ron DeSantis has crystallized so well is, if you think back to March of 2020, what we were all told was something pretty straightforward, transparent, and relatively easy to understand. Dr. Fauci walked out in the White House and sold us on the idea of 15 days to stop the spread. And if you remember, that was all about lessening the overall peak of infection to try to avoid overloading hospitals. Now, by and large, hospitals across this country have not been overloaded. They certainly have been strained at different points of time, but we haven't seen what was initially feared, which was, oh my goodness, there are going to be tens of thousands of people that need medical treatment, and there will be no way for the hospitals to actually handle all of those people. We just haven't seen it. So we had 15 days to stop the spread, and now we have advanced all the way to, if you don't get the COVID vaccine, and by the way, soon you don't get the COVID vaccine booster, you're going to lose your job. And that is an unbelievable and excessive overreach of the federal government. This is me putting my lawyer hat on. I believe that's unconstitutional. I don't think that the federal government, given where we are with COVID, should have the power, or has the power under our Constitution, to mandate vaccines as expansively as Joe Biden has laid out his vaccine mandate. I suspect that is one reason why the vaccine mandate hasn't come out yet. In fact, there are a lot of businesses out there that are reportedly arguing with the Biden administration right now, please don't issue this vaccine mandate before the holidays, because if you do, it's going to be virtually impossible for many different levels of our economy to function. We already have major supply chain disruptions. What's going to happen if truck drivers, for instance, suddenly decide not to get the COVID vaccine and you don't have the ability to utilize their big rigs to move products across the country when you've already got a major supply chain shortage that is underway? What's going to happen if a lot of people who stock the shelves inside of major retail establishments decide not to get the COVID vaccine and therefore are not employed? So right now you have big business begging the Biden administration, at least wait till after the holidays. And that's why I floated the idea that the Biden administration, the reason they haven't released their federal vaccine mandate, is because I think they know that it's unconstitutional, and they are hoping that the threat will lead to more people getting the COVID vaccine. And then after the first of the year, if we don't have a major surge in COVID cases, and remember they're going down for the most part across the country right now, then they can argue, hey, we don't have to implement this federal vaccine mandate anymore because so many people got the vaccines. The vaccines work so well. Look, Joe Biden solved all of the issues surrounding COVID. That's what I think the Biden administration would like to argue. That, however, will be in the future. When we come back, got an interesting battle over celebrities who are willing to stand up against COVID vaccine mandates. And I want you to hear some of the reaction that those celebrities are getting, because we're creating some interesting dynamics that cut across race and gender lines and help to destroy identity politics, all brought in by these COVID vaccine mandates. That will be next. But in the meantime, very least we can do for the families of fallen soldiers in our nation's war on terror is provide security. That's what these soldiers were doing for us, defending our freedoms and creating security for all of us. Tunnel to Towers Foundation takes this mission quite literally. This year, they will proudly place 200 forever changed families into mortgage-free homes. That's akin to building a large neighborhood of new homes and giving every one of them away to a deserving man, woman, or child. Truth is, they do this all over the country and not just in one neighborhood. Each family has a captivating story, as does their fallen soldier relative. With your help and donations, Tunnel to Towers Foundation is achieving their most ambitious dreams forever. There are many more heroes who need your help. That's why we need you to donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. Welcome back in. Finishing off hour number one, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Buck out sick today. We'll be back tomorrow. Talked about some of the politics of vaccine mandates and how it has created some strange bedfellows. One of the most outspoken groups that has had a lot of different celebrities standing up and saying, wait a minute, I don't really agree with the concept of the government mandating a COVID vaccine. A lot of athletes, a lot of comedians, and a lot of entertainers in general have been willing to speak out against the prevailing hegemony that exists on the left-wing woke culture. And in particular, I saw this yesterday. Floyd Mayweather, who is maybe the most successful boxer of his generation, he posted a video supporting Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is an NBA player who has refused to get vaccinated. Listen to what Floyd Mayweather said, and then I want to share with you some of the attacks that are occurring based on comments like these.
America is the land of the free. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and supposedly freedom to choose. Never be controlled by money. I respect you for having some integrity and being your own man. A free mind makes its own choices, and an enslaved mind follows the crowd. Stand for something or fall for anything. One man can lead a revolution to stand up and fight for what's right. One choice, one word, one action can change the world. It's crazy how people hate you for being a leader. I hope your actions encourage many others to stand up and say enough is enough. Respect to you, Kyrie, and power to the people.
Okay, so that's Floyd Mayweather. Here's what he also said. Choice is defined as an act of selecting or making a decision when faced with two or more possibilities. America gave us the choice to take the vaccine or not take the vaccine. As time moves on, that choice is gradually being stripped from us. And what's interesting is the number of people who claim that they are all for free expression and outspoken political opinions, who as soon as someone says anything other than embracing the prevailing woke orthodox in the world of athletics or entertainment, they turn it into an opportunity to call them sellouts or racist or Uncle Toms. Deadspin, which is a website mostly bereft of all functional intelligence, used to be a fun, zany, irreverent place for sports fans to go hang out. They had an article that they published in the last day or so, and the headline is, Kyrie Irving and Dave Chappelle are being used as black pawns on a white chessboard. Now, it doesn't really make sense because a white chessboard, you know, there's black and white pieces, and there's black and white pieces on the chessboard too, the squares. But what's really kind of fascinating is look at how quickly Kyrie Irving, Dave Chappelle, you just heard from Floyd Mayweather. These are prominent black athletes and celebrities who are speaking out against, in the case of Dave Chappelle, the idea of protected treatment for people who are transgender. In the case of Kyrie Irving, it's against the New York City vaccine mandates, which he is refusing to comply with and thereby makes him ineligible to play. And in the case of Floyd Mayweather, he's singing the praises of Kyrie Irving for being willing to make those choices. But don't mistake what's going on here. The same people who have lionized Colin Kaepernick for years for taking a knee are now denigrating to the high heavens athletes who don't have the same opinion as them when it comes to the COVID vaccine. And by the way, these athletes aren't saying don't take the vaccine if you decide it's the right choice for you. They're just saying mandates are wrong. And I know there's this desire to label everybody out there who doesn't believe in mandates as anti-vax, right? That's the new insult that everybody gets that's tossed on them. I don't believe in getting my young kids vaccinated for COVID because COVID is not a risk to them. That doesn't make me anti-vax. I'm certainly in favor of measles, mumps, rubella. As many of you out there listening right now, my kids are vaccinated. I'm opposed to unnecessary mandatory vaccines. But I'm not opposed to you if you desire and believe that it makes the most sense for your health, being able to go make that choice yourself. There is a fundamental, and by the way, that goes for masks, that goes for social distancing, all these different COVID-related mandates really, to me, come down to choice and risk analysis within the context of your own age. A four-year-old and an 84-year-old do not have the same risk for COVID. The 84-year-old, I think, probably should get the COVID vaccine. The four-year-old should not. That's simple risk analysis. It's not being anti-vax. It's being intelligent enough to understand that a one-size-fits-all policy for 330 million people in the United States doesn't make sense. It also doesn't consider all of you out there, like me, who've already had COVID and have natural immunity now as a result of having had COVID. My kids, it doesn't make sense for them to get vaccinated based on the data. They're under far more risk from far less dangerous things. They're way more likely to die in a traffic accident or get murdered or die of the seasonal flu. Being a parent is about teaching your kids how to deal with risk. It's one of the most important things we teach our kids. And if you are teaching them that they're in danger from COVID, frankly, you're not listening to the data at all. When we come back, top of the second hour, Molly Hemingway on the battle around the 2020 election and what actually went down. She spent 5 hours talking with Donald Trump. What did she learn? She'll tell us next. It's going to be fantastic. Then the third hour, our buddy Alex Berenson, all that headed your direction. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Thanks for having your Thursday with us for this first hour, plus the latest on the infrastructure bill and the budget reconciliation bill. That's all coming next.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show, rolling through the Thursday edition of the program. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. So many different stories right now on Capitol Hill coming together. We are trying to keep you updated on what exactly is going on as it pertains to the infrastructure bill, which may be voted on today by the House, but also the budget reconciliation bill, which has now been officially laid out in some way. And that is going to be, I would imagine, a major battle between the two of these and the interplay. complicated. A lot of different chess board maneuverings going on right now. And we will keep you updated on that throughout the course of the show, as well as tomorrow with the latest. We are joined now by Molly Hemingway, who has got a fabulous book that is coming out. We're going to talk about that regarding what exactly went on in the 2020 election and beyond. Buck Sexton, I should mention, Molly, as she comes in with us right now, Buck is out sick. I know you know Buck well, Molly, but I want to start with this. Your book on Brett Kavanaugh was incredible. The behind-the-scenes maneuvering associated with how Brett Kavanaugh ended up on the Supreme Court, the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings, it was absolutely riveting. I don't think I've ever spoken to you before, but I wanted you to hear that directly from me. It was so incredibly well done. How much time and research and energy and effort did you put into telling that story as in such a compelling fashion as you did?
Well, thank you, first of all. I appreciate that. And I was glad to research and report on both books. For the first book, my co-author, Carrie Severino, and I interviewed more than 100 people who were involved in the confirmation of Kavanaugh. You know, that included everyone at the White House, in the Senate, in the outside groups. And it was just fascinating to get their stories and inside details and be able to record for posterity what actually happened. Because we knew that the media would do what they did with Clarence Thomas, which is, you know, tell false stories and then just keep telling and telling and telling them for decades. And then the real history gets lost. And so I took that same approach with Rigged, which tells what happened during the 2020 election. Tons of interviews from people on the Trump campaign and RNC, but at the state and the local level, the outside groups, to really get a handle on just what happened in this craziest election of our lifetime.
Okay, so I haven't read Rigged yet, but I encourage everybody out there, just based on your last book, to read this one, and I will read it as well. Rigged: How the Media, Big Tech, and the Democrats Seized Our Elections. Let's talk about some of the things that you uncovered during the course of reporting on this book. And I want to start with one that I know all of our listeners are focused on because it was such an egregious example of this overreach. And that was the New York Post basically getting canceled by Twitter and other big tech platforms when they came out with what has now basically been confirmed to have been an accurate story about Hunter Biden's laptop and everything associated with the revelations on that laptop. In the years ahead, will this come to seem even more egregious in your mind than it does now? Or is this something that people are going to pretend on the left just never happened as a result of it now having been proven true and that their censorship was, in many ways, a direct refutation of the truth?
It was shocking and horrifying and one of the worst things I've ever seen, more Stalinist than American, to watch as all of these powerful entities just decided they were going to memory hole not just an important story, but one of the more important stories of the campaign. You know, we know the Biden family has a business, and that's where foreign oligarchs and other powerful people give money to members of the Biden family, and then it's completely unknown what they get in return, you know, and because it's unknown, it's presumably related to policy and taxpayer dollars. And so there was no question that this was an important story for journalists to cover. They never covered it. And then when the New York Post did cover it, they did their best to lie about it, claim it was Russian misinformation, to deplatform New York Post and anybody who shared the story. It was horrible, but it was just one of many ways that our corrupt media have harmed the country and harmed civil discourse, harmed the integrity of our elections. Because, you know, you look at what our country was founded on, and it's freedom of information and the right to pursue the truth. And this is, you know, encoded in the First Amendment, freedom of religion, speech, press, all these things. And the war and the media and big tech went to war against these founding ideas that are like predate our actual country. And it was horrifying to go through.
If you compare the false allegations of Russia collusion with what we 100% know was big tech collusion, isn't it unbelievable that so many people who spread the big lie of Russia collusion were directly complicit in a conspiracy of big tech companies to alter the outcome of the 2020 election after they falsely argued that 2016 had been the collusive driven election that was outcome, that outcome pursuit driven in that way. It's an extraordinary irony.
Yes, Clay, isn't that very interesting that, you know, from 2016 through the next election, it wasn't like a fringe theory that these conspiracy theorists held to and promulgated. It was massive. It was everybody in the media, everybody in the Democratic Party. They claimed that Donald Trump stole the 2016 election because he was a secret agent of Russia. It was absurd. It was evil. And they did it every day, multiple times a day. And then then 2020 happens. We have all these changes to our election laws. We have mail-in ballots flooding the system. We have Mark Zuckerberg engaged in a private takeover of our government election offices. We have the media and tech issues that we talked about. And then all of a sudden, these very same people who spread the lie that Donald Trump stole the 2016 election and spread it maliciously and continuously for years, all of a sudden they're like, you can't talk about any problems with the 2020 election. And when it comes down to it, the only thing they can like hang their hat on is that Russia was meddled in our elections, you know, for like 100 years, except for 2018 and 2020, apparently. They bought like $100,000 in Facebook ads, some of which benefited Hillary Clinton, some of which benefited Donald Trump. Well, compare that with what tech did in 2020. They spent 4 years gaming algorithms, 4 years deplatforming effective conservative voices, 4 years censoring important stories, 4 years, you know, telling their left-leaning social media users to go register to vote and to go vote, but not their right-leaning users. I mean, talk about meddling, and on a scale so much beyond a piddly, you know, whatever Russia did in 2016.
It's well said, and I think you and I understand this a lot better than your average person would, because we write online, and you mentioned $100,000 in Facebook ads. That might sound like a lot of money to a regular person, because $100,000 is a lot of money to a regular person. To someone who is buying Facebook ads, $100,000, Molly, is nothing. I mean, that is such a tiny pinprick of money. The idea that you could swing a presidential election for $100,000 when we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year, if not billions of dollars a year, on presidential elections is one of the dumbest. Leave aside the dishonesty of it. It's one of the dumbest arguments that I've ever seen made and accepted as a reality by anyone with a functional brain.
And yet, again, it was not fringe. It wasn't,
yes,
you know, on the outer edges of the internet that this was being promulgated. It was every day in the Washington Post, New York Times, you know, CNN, MSNBC, all the major media. And it was, you know, too stupid to believe they actually thought that what they were saying was real, but caused real damage. And like you point out, what tech companies themselves did, you know, after 2016, they felt responsible for Donald Trump winning because the media had manipulated Trump's message so that people wouldn't vote for him. So he just went with social media to speak directly to the people, and the people found that very compelling. And so they decided, well, we can't let him speak directly to the people. We have to control this. And they did, they were kind of public about it, but they did all of this game playing, you know, with search engines, with suppression of news stories. If you were a left-wing newspaper like the Washington Post or New York Times, or, you know, even outright like an acknowledged leftist media, those were elevated on Facebook and other social media platforms. If you didn't hew to corporate media's party line, if you, for instance, said that the Russia collusion hoax was a lie, which is true, they would decrease your reach on social media. Think about the profound implications of how that affected people's understanding of reality and how they might vote in subsequent elections.
There's no doubt. We're talking to Molly Hemingway. She's a senior editor at The Federalist, author of the new book, which I would encourage all of you to read, Rigged. Of the big tech companies, if you were doing a power ranking of how impactful they were in helping to rig the 2020 election for Joe Biden, how would you assess Twitter, Facebook, Google, YouTube, all of these different big tech companies, and essentially the contributions that they were making in favor of Joe Biden? Did any one or two companies stagger you more than others in terms of the decisions they were making? How would you rank them?
Well, of course, they're all kind of related, sometimes officially, and sometimes they coordinate to deplatform voices together. But I would say the role that Google plays in controlling access to information, they're more powerful than any country on earth. they can deplatform people at will in a way that, you know, they can take sites offline, they can take voices offline, and then they do it a lot with ways that people don't understand. So if you, you know, if you're putting something into a search engine, I think many Americans have this naive idea that what they're getting back is somehow balanced or impartial. That just simply is not true. They have shown, you know, for years that conservative or non-leftist voices are marginalized in these search engines in a way that is almost like a psychological experiment on the American people, and of course in other countries as well.
Is it going to get better or worse in your mind as we move into 2022 and 2024? Is there any shame? Is there any legal peril that the Googles, the Facebooks, the Twitters of the world are facing now based on regulatory investigations? Or do you think they've been emboldened now, given how much and how impactful they were, that 2022 and 2024 could be worse? Where do we go from here?
I think we saw what happened after 2020, and this is partly why the media don't want people to talk about the election, is because they want to continue the operation. Certain things that were done, like Mark Zuckerberg's private takeover of government election offices, where he spent about as much money as the federal government did to run the election and to embed left-wing activists into it, some states have made that illegal, some states haven't. So it can either continue or not continue, depending on what the state law is. But in general, I think tech companies do feel emboldened. They might be a little surprised that they're not receiving more gratitude from the Democrat Party, but be that as it may, I think they feel emboldened. And you're seeing Democrats trying to ensconce into permanent law some of the changes that they wrought in 2020 to create more inconsistency and chaos in our election processes. That's kind of a feature for them, even if it's a bug for most people to look at what happened after 2020 and be like, I don't know if we should have to wait weeks to find out how many people voted, much less who they voted for. But you'll see these battles continuing to matter, because this wasn't just about stopping Donald Trump. This is about power going forward for whole parties and for whole movements.
Last question for you. We have President Trump on the show tomorrow in the final hour of the program scheduled to be on with us. I believe you talked with him for 5 hours or more as a part of your book, Rigged. What did you learn from President Trump? And based on those conversations, do you think he is inclined to run again in 2024 in your mind?
Yeah, when I interviewed him 3 times for the book. And the first interview, I wasn't quite sure if he wanted to run again. I almost got the feeling he didn't want to have to do it. So I think 3 things are arguing in favor of him running. One, I think he's disappointed that the Republican Party has kind of returned to form, that feckless weakness that frustrated voters so much. Two, I don't think he's getting credit for what he did. I mean, he actually achieved quite a bit policy-wise. And I think that he needs to have his legacy affirmed for him not to want to run again. And then finally, I think the establishment is freaking out so much about him running that it's signaling to him that he might need to do it again. So I don't know if he will or won't, but it is interesting to see how poorly the establishment responded to his initial run and how poorly they're responding to the political situation right now.
Molly Hemingway, she is the senior editor at The Federalist, fantastic author. Go read Rigged. I'm looking forward to reading it myself, all about the 2020 presidential election and the power of big tech to rig the outcome of this election. Molly, keep up the good work. Appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, Clay. Bye.
That is Molly Hemingway. We will be back, break down a little bit more of that discussion, because I do think the power and scope and magnitude of big tech's influence continues to be underrated in terms of what they were capable of pulling off in the 2020 election. But that will be in a moment. First, I got to tell you, what's the best discovery in the past month that we've had here on the show? How about Tommy John gear? Buck and I are both wearing it all the time. Pullover tops, undershirts, underwear, top of the line comfort. This brand, Tommy John, clearly started with the introduction of the world's most comfortable underwear, and they've expanded from there. Right now, with Tommy John underwear, the statement is pretty true. When you start off your day wearing Tommy John, you're that much more comfortable. You can do everything better. Tommy John's men's underwear, breathable, lightweight, moisture-wicking fabric, 4 times the stretch of competing brands, with over 16 million pairs sold. They have fanatics, not fans. We're proudly Tommy John fanatics here on the show. And this fall, you can upgrade what's underneath with new Tommy John underwear. They look great, feel even better, and it's all backed by Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. 20% off right now with your first order at TommyJohn.com/clay. That's TommyJohn.com/clay, my name, C-L-A-Y, for 20% off. One more time, TommyJohn.com/clay. See site for details.